and welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the 2019 season. The program notes I'm reading today are for the performance by the North Carolina Symphony at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday night, February 22nd and 23rd, at Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh. This concert will be conducted by guest conductor Ivan Goldberg Jensen and the featured soloist, pianist Behzad Abdrahimov. The program on this performance will include the following. The symphony comes onto the stage to perform Chasing Light by René Ort, and that will be followed by the major work for this program, the Piano Concerto No. 2 in C minor, Opus 18, by Sergei Rachmaninoff. Then following the intermission, the symphony returns to the stage to perform Symphony Fantastique, Opus 14, by Hector Berlioz. Now I'll begin reading from program notes. First, I'll have some background information about our guest conductor and guest soloist. Equally at home on the concert platform and in the opera house, Ivan Goldberg Jensen will lead concerts throughout the 2018-19 season with the Hamburger Symphoniker, including Beethoven No. 9, for their New Year's concert. Reinvitations following the 2017-18 season see Goldberg Jensen conduct the Norwegian Arctic Philharmonic Orchestra and the Ulster Orchestra, where he will conduct Anna Klein's This Midnight Hour. In North America, Goldberg Jensen debuts with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra, the Oregon Symphony, and, of course, the North Carolina Symphony. Now the guest pianist, Behzad Abdrahimov, has performed with orchestras worldwide, including the Los Angeles Philharmonic, London Symphony Orchestra, the NHK Symphony Orchestra, and the Münchener Philharmoniker. Upcoming European engagements include the Orchestra de Paris, Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, Luzerner Sinfonio Orchestra, and the English Chamber Orchestra, as well as performances in St. Petersburg and Barcelona with St. Petersburg Philharmonic Orchestra. He will also be presented in recital at the Kölner Philharmonie and returns to the Verbier and Rheingau festivals as well. The concert begins with the North Carolina Symphony performing Chasing Light by René Ort. Ort was born in 1985 in Dallas, Texas. The work was composed in 2015. The first performance was 2015 in Philadelphia, and it was performed by the Curtis Symphony Orchestra. Now here is the overview. Originally from Dallas, Texas, composer René Ort is a graduate of the University of Louisville and Curtis Institute of Music and is currently composer in residence of Opera Philadelphia. She has composed music for string quartet, dance, and voice. Her chamber opera, Empty the House, was produced at CIM this year. She has just finished a new work, 10 Days in a Madhouse, inspired by a film about reporter Nellie Bly. In 1887, Bly committed herself to an asylum for Joseph Pulitzer's New York World, and her expose led to major reforms in mental health institutions. Ort was a recipient of an American Composers Forum Subito grant and the Kentucky Foundation for Women Artist Enrichment Grant. Ort composed Chasing Light in 2015 for the Curtis Symphony Orchestra for her graduation from that organization. She describes it as racing to the light at the end of the tunnel. Now, here's what to listen for. Chasing Light is something like a relay race through the orchestra, with instruments and sections taking up the baton in turns. At times, various combinations of instruments team up as if to surround and capture their quarry. The light itself, however, remains elusive, both to the pursuers and to the listener. Chasing Light brings to mind the game cat owners play with laser lights, to the delight and frustration of their pets. The abruptly quiet conclusion suggests either success or exhaustion. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: 2 flutes, 2 oboes, 2 clarinets, 2 bassoons, 4 horns, 3 trumpets, 3 trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, and strings. Next, the North Carolina Symphony presents the major presentation for this concert, the Piano Concerto No. 2 in C minor, Opus 18, by Sergei Rachmaninoff. Rachmaninoff was born April 1, 1873, near Novgorod, Russia, and he died March 28, 1943, in Los Angeles. The work was composed in 1900 and 1901, the first performance, November 9, 1901, Moscow Philharmonic Society, Alexander Solati conducting with the composer himself as the soloist. Now, here is the overview. Sergei Rachmaninoff grew up in a middle-class musical family, but under strained economic conditions. His father, a gambler and an alcoholic, squandered the family's fortune to the point that eventually his mother and father separated, and she had to sell what remained of the family's assets and move into a small apartment in St. Petersburg. Young Sergei, whose care in better times would have been entrusted to a nanny, consequently grew up with little supervision. His schooling suffered as a result. Although he showed early promise as a pianist and obtained a scholarship to study at the St. Petersburg Conservatory, the administration threatened to expel him for failing to attend classes. He subsequently transferred to the Moscow Conservatory, where his mentor, Nikolai Zarev, discouraged his initial attempts at composing. Nevertheless, Rachmaninoff continued to march to the beat of his own drummer, defying his teacher and transferring to classes in counterpoint and composition. Clearly, his sense of his own worth was more accurate than that of his professors. While still a student, he produced a string of successful works, including the tone poem Prince Radoslav, his first piano trio, and a flood of songs and piano pieces. For his graduation in 1892, he composed the opera Aleko, which won him the highest distinction, the Great Gold Medal. The same year, he also composed the Prelude in C-sharp minor, a work whose inordinate fame haunted him all his life because audiences always expected and demanded it as an encore at his performances at one of his greatest pianists. By 1895, Rachmaninoff felt confident enough to compose a symphony. The premiere took place in St. Petersburg in 1897, but was a dismal failure, in large part because of shoddy conducting by Alexander Glazunov, who was under the influence. While earlier setbacks had produced in the young composer creative defiance, this disappointment brought on a severe depression. For 3 years, he was unable to do any significant composing. After consulting numerous physicians and advisors, even asking old Leo Tolstoy for help, he finally went for therapy in 1900 to Dr. Nikolai Dahl, an internist who had studied hypnosis and rudimentary psychiatry in Paris. Well, the result was one of the first well-known successes of modern psychotherapy. Although the composer was able to return to creative work, relapses into depression dogged him for the rest of his life. Significantly, all his large instrumental compositions are in minor keys, and one of the melodic themes recurring in many of his compositions is the Désiré from the Catholic Mass for the Dead, reminding mourners of the terrors of the Day of Judgment. Rachmaninoff expressed his gratitude to Dr. Dahl by dedicating the second piano concerto to him. The first performance of the complete work in November 1901 was an instant success. It is Rachmaninoff's most frequently performed and recorded orchestral works. It even found its way into Hollywood as background music to the World War II movie Brief Encounter. Now here's what to listen for. The first movement opens with dark, plodding, and unaccompanied chords on the piano that increase in intensity and volume, gradually joined by the orchestra and leading to the first theme. The effect is like the tolling of the giant low-pitched bells common in Russian churches. The second broadly romantic theme is a Rachmaninoff signature. The lyrical mood is sustained throughout until the coda with its sudden conclusion in a dramatic burst of energy. In the adagio sostenuto, muted strings followed by the piano left hand hesitantly accompany the high woodwinds. The right hand then joins the woodwinds in dreamy interplay. After a brief energetic cadenza, the atmosphere of the beginning returns. The beginning of the third movement in the lower range of the orchestra is deceptively gentle, enhancing the surprise of the sudden sparkling piano cadenza. The main theme introduced by the violas and the oboes is intensely passionate, in the same vein as in the second theme of the opening movement. After a surprisingly calm episode, the tempo increases to presto, and after another short cadenza, the highest instruments in the orchestra take up the theme, culminating in a glittering climax. The instrumentation for this work is, for solo piano, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, three trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, and strings. Following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform the Symphonie Fantastique, Opus 14 by Hector Berlioz. Berlioz was born December 11, 1803 in La Côte-Saint-André, France, and he died March 8, 1869 in Paris. The work was composed in 1830, the first performance December of that year in Paris, the Société des Concerts du Conservatoire. François-Antoine Habernec was the conductor. Now here is the overview. Being a rebel without independent means makes life difficult for an artist. Hector Berlioz, the son of a physician, was sent by his family to Paris to study medicine, but at 21 gave it up to become a musician. To make ends meet as a composer, he became a prolific writer on music, musicians, conducting, and orchestration, as well as a sharp-tongued music critic for Paris newspapers. Berlioz was a master of orchestration. He freed the brass, making it the equal of the other orchestral sections. He experimented with new instruments, including the bass clarinet and valve trumpet, and pioneered the use of the English horn as one of the orchestra's most expressive solo instruments. He paid only lip service to the conventional musical form and was the foremost advocate of program music. And most of his compositions are narrative, related in some way to a story or literary text. This approach to art was the natural outcome of his belief in the inseparability of music and ideas. For Berlioz, music and literature were inextricably connected as the quintessential expression of human imagination and emotion. As if romantic literature didn't present enough Sturm und Drang, Berlioz's personal life added a subsequent entanglement. Around 1827, he attended productions in Paris of Romeo and Juliet and Hamlet, performed by the great British actor David Garrick, and the apparently somewhat less talented actress Harriet Smithson. Now, despite the fact that the young composer didn't know English, he fell madly in love with Smithson, developed an obsession, fixation on her that inspired the Symphonie Fantastique, and he married her 6 years later, ultimately making both of them miserable. Now here's what to listen for. The Symphonie Fantastique is the first example of a narrative symphony. Berlioz composed it in 1830 as a musical testament to his infatuation. The symphony is united by what the composer himself termed as an idea fixe, a theme introduced in the first movement symbolizing the obsession with the beloved. The movement describes a young musician encountering his ideal woman for the first time. His fervor is so great that by the end of the movement, the theme turns religious. In the second movement, a lilting waltz, the artist attends a ball where among the dancing couples he becomes conscious of his beloved's presence with the sudden reappearance of the idea fixe. In the third movement, the artist goes for an outing in the pastoral countryside, in the midst of which he suddenly remembers his beloved. The movement opens with a haunting echo duet for English horn and oboe. There follows a violent storm in which the thunder symbolizes and foreshadows the disastrous denouement of the affair. By the fourth movement, the artist's desperation grows, as does his irrationality. In an opium-induced fantasy, he murders his beloved and is condemned to the guillotine. Before the blade falls, the idea fixe is imprinted on his memory. The finale describes an after-death experience, the witch's Sabbath. The idea fixe now reappears in a grotesquely screeching clarinet solo. The ideal beloved, now the object of ridicule. At this point, Berlioz quotes the Dies Irae. He contrapuntally combines the witch's dance with the plain chant melody in one of his signature musical devices, which he called the reunion of two themes. The two melodies are presented separately, then combined, as musically incompatible as they are, to create a kind of musical irony, and the work ends in a wild orchestral climax. This work is scored for piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, English horn, two clarinets, E-flat clarinet, four bassoons, four horns, two trumpets, two cornets, three trombones, two tubas, timpani, percussion, two harps, and strings. These program notes were written and copyrighted in 2018 by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn. You have been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I will be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2019 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thank you so much for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.